Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So Money episode 52, Rick Edelman.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Good day to all of you. Welcome back to So Money. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Now, whether you're ready to work with a financial advisor and not sure about how to go about it, or maybe just trying to figure out if you should work with one day, someday, today's episode is going to be a valuable resource for you. It's packed with awesome tips and advice from our special guest, Rick Edelman. Rick is the founder and CEO of Edelman Financial Services. It is one of the largest independent financial planning firms in the country with 40 offices across the nation. He's been ranked 3 times as the number one independent financial advisor in the country by Barron's. Rick and his team have been helping thousands of people just like us for 27 years. Not to mention, he has written 8 books and is a number one New York Times bestselling author. 3 valuable takeaways from our time with Rick. 1, how to know if you're ready to work with an advisor. This, I know, is something many listeners are grappling with. You might be curious about this. Rick settles this for us once and for all. How to choose the best planner for you and the questions to ask before working with someone. And Rick's money secrets to a happy marriage. He and his wife formed their advisory all those years ago together. Here is Rick Edelman. Rick Edelman, welcome to So Money. A pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Happy to be with you.
You are the number one independent financial advisor in the nation, according to Barron's, and you've held that title now three times. And this is why I love having you on the show, precisely because so many of my listeners send in questions all the time. And a lot of the questions that they ask is, how do I find a financial advisor? How do I know I'm ready to work with a financial advisor? And what's going to be the investment? What does it cost? So can you simplify that for our listeners and just clear the confusion once and for all?
Sure. Everybody needs to engage in financial planning. Not everybody needs a financial planner, but we all need to engage in financial planning. We all need to save money. We need to get ourselves out of debt. We need to pay our bills on time and effectively. We need to have a good credit record, which affects our ability to borrow money and to do so at low cost. We need to handle the employee benefits at work, choosing the health insurance plan at work, participating in our retirement plan at work. We're all buying cars, so we have to figure out the best way to do that, buy it versus lease it, and pay cash versus finance it, things of that sort. We need insurance. We need to buy health insurance, life insurance, property insurance, whether we own or rent where we live. We need to protect our possessions, auto insurance. We have to have a will to protect our family in case something happens to us. So there's a broad array of questions that affect all of us on a daily basis, for everything from credit cards on one extreme to dealing with estate planning on the other extreme and everything in between. Most of us don't have a lot of education about this subject. Most of us aren't taught anything about money in school. You know, we go through 12 years of school and then 4 years of college, and then for many of us, post-grad educations. And yet in all of those 12, 16, 20 years of education, when's the last time anybody taught you how to balance a checkbook? Right. When did anybody teach you the impact of compound growth, understanding the difference between term life insurance and whole life insurance? Most of us have no education here. So if you don't know what you're doing, because you lack the education, or if you don't have the time to do it yourself, because we're all busy doing other things, or if you don't have the desire, because let's face it, this is a pretty boring subject and we'd all rather be spending our time other ways, that's why you hire a financial advisor. In other words, if you have the time and the desire and the knowledge, you can easily tend to these issues yourself. It's not that complicated. It's not that hard, but it is time consuming and does require that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, then talk with a financial advisor. It's as simple as that. In terms of what the advisor is going to charge you, well, it depends on the services that they provide for you. But let me summarize it in a nutshell. Working with a financial advisor is a profitable thing to do. In other words, no matter what the advisor charges you, you're going to end up better off. That's the whole point. The advisor is going to charge you to manage your investments or to sell you investments, depending whether they are fee-based or commission-based. An advisor is going to help you with insurance, and there are commissions that you're going to pay when you buy an insurance policy, and so on. So you're always going to incur costs, either fees to the advisor or commissions when you buy investments or insurance or what have you. You're going to pay an accountant to do your taxes. You're going to pay a lawyer to get a will. You're going to incur costs, but you're going to end up much better off after having incurred those costs because you're wealth will be higher. Your safety will be greater. Your life will be simpler. So if it wasn't that way, nobody would ever pay financial advisors and the advisory field wouldn't even exist. How much you pay is going to depend on the services you need. And that, therefore, becomes the most important question, Farnoosh, that you should ask an advisor. Tell me what the services are that you provide your clients. And make sure that what they say fits with what you need. Some advisors emphasize investments, others insurance. Some work with senior executives of Fortune 500 companies. Others work with widows. Some work with newly married people. Others work with divorcees. Some work with the LGBT community. Yeah, the lesbian community, gay communities, and transgenders and bisexuals. And some work only with people who have what we call sudden money, lottery winners, for example, or people who win inheritances. So you want to find out, is this advisor experienced at dealing with people like me? And do they deliver the kinds of services that I'm in need for? If you're severely in credit card debt, you don't need an investment advisor. You need a debt counselor. On the other hand, if you've got $1 million in savings that you just got because Aunt Ida passed away and named you as her heir, well, you need an advisor with that kind of experience and skills. So it's really very simple. Tell me the kind of services you provide and who you provide them for, and let's see if that advisor describes you. If so, you've got a good match.
Yes. And that is something that, so you say, ask, you know, what are your services? I would also add, how do you get paid?
Absolutely right. It's the next follow-on question. Make sure, and I'll even take it a step further. When you ask the advisor, how do you get paid? You got to be careful because you might get a misleading answer. And because if you say to an advisor, how do you get paid? The advisor may say, oh, I charge 1% a year on the amount of money invested. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little misleading because you may incur costs to purchase the investments in addition to the advisor's 1% a year. So instead of saying, how much do you get paid? Ask it this way. Tell me what the total costs will be all in if I were to hire you. How much is your fee and how much are the other fees I might pay? Are there fees to open accounts or close them? Are there fees to purchase the investments you're going to tell me to buy? Are those upfront fees? Are they annual fees? Are there surrender fees? Are there fees to open account or close an account? What are the annual taxes going to be like to own these investments? So be careful how you ask the question to make sure that you get a full comprehensive answer.
Bravo. Yes. Yes. Hope everybody was taking notes. And if not, the transcript for this very important question, Q&A, is at somoneypodcast.com. Well, Rick, I also wanted to have you here because I wanted to learn more about you personally, your journey, your financial habits, failures, successes, your So Money moment. But let's begin with a philosophy, a financial philosophy that you practice, that you uphold, that helps keep your finances growing and in check.
Well, my wife and I work very closely together in all aspects of our lives. We founded our firm together 27 years ago. And Jean's attitude is that personal finance is more personal than finance. It really isn't money that is the driver of our interest in this field. It's the human condition. It's how do you help people achieve their goals and live lives that are free of financial stress? Because we know that money is one of the leading causes of stress, certainly one of the leading causes of divorce. And so we believe that it's not about beating the market. It's not about Wall Street. We really couldn't care about macroeconomic policy or the latest Fed meeting. What really matters is, what are we trying to accomplish? What do we want to do with our lives? What do we want to be when we grow up? And how can we alter how we handle our money to help us achieve those goals, to live the lifestyle that we want, to foster and develop our own relationship with each other, as well as that of our families and our communities? And so for us, the philosophy of money is that money is only good if applied toward personal and individual and joint goals.
And how do you practice this in your own life?
Well, Jean and I have had an attitude forever that neither one of us spends any money without the consent of the other. Back when we were newly married in the 1980s, the dollar amount was $25. Neither one of us could mm-hmm. spend more than $25 wow. without the permission of the other. Today, it's $100. We've increased it with inflation. Neither one of us will spend more than $100 without asking the permission of the other. And this serves two purposes. One, it allows us to be inclusionary. We're both aware of what the other is doing. We're respectful of the other's interests and desires. It's not that Jean is going to say no if I want to buy something. It's that she helps to understand what my motivations are. Why am I interested in that expense? How is it making me happy? How is it serving our goals? And one of the key questions, since I know that I'm going to talk with Jean before I spend any money, I know one key question she's going to ask me, the same question I'm going to ask her: how does this expense fit in to our financial plan? Very often, people can't buy the car they want or the house they want or take the grand vacation they want or send their child to the college they want because they haven't saved for those huge expenses, because they're busy spending all of their money on stupid little things like cups of coffee, cigarettes, and sodas and candy bars during the day. And they think that it doesn't make any difference, those dollars and quarters and nickels that people spend. But in fact, it's the small spending that has a huge impact on whether we can achieve our big goals. So before spending $50 on this whatever over here that I'll quickly forget all about, we can ask ourselves, would that $50 be better spent toward our true financial planning goals? And so by making sure that we are treating our money as ours as opposed to hers versus mine, we're working together toward common goals. We're showing mutual respect for each other with money, and it helps to reinforce our relationship.
Take us down memory lane, Rick. You don't just become the country's number one financial advisor overnight. And I'm curious to know how you had what was your first financial epiphany or first financial memory that necessarily shaped the way that you approach and think about money today?
Well, I was very fortunate. I grew up in a upper middle class family. My parents were entrepreneurs. Dad owned his own business, and mom was heavily involved in operating that business with him. They worked 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. We never took family vacations. Their busiest times of the week were weekends. So dad was always gone from Friday night through Sunday night. So I was able to grow up in a materially, at least, a nice household, a wonderful middle class family and neighborhood, and money wasn't an issue. If I had a nice allowance without having to work for it, Dad was, other than working with him and his business, he was adamant that he didn't want his children to have to work summer jobs because he had to as a kid, and he was determined not to have us to do the same. And so I learned about money from more of a personal responsibility perspective by observing my dad and my mom and how hard they worked and how careful they were with the financial decisions. And they involved me in it. I remember helping my dad prepare his tax returns. I remember working with my dad and watching how he made business decisions and the economic implications of that. And so it taught me that money is a tool. Money is a necessary part of life. And even though I didn't have to go mow lawns to raise some money for my own spending, I was very early taught on the importance of money, its relevance, and how necessary it is to focus long term and not squander the dollars in your pocket on frivolous spending.
When you did receive an allowance as a kid, what was the first thing you wanted to spend it on?
Oh, I think it was just like all other kids spending. I was loved music, and so I was always in a record store, I couldn't ever get enough of it. The opportunity to go to concerts when I was a teenager was absolutely huge for me. And I think like all kids, immediate gratification is always very tempting.
Certainly. Well, and sometimes immediate gratification can get us into trouble, which transitions us well now into the financial failure question of the show. Rick, if you wouldn't mind, share with us a financial failure in your life. What happened and what'd you learn?
Well, the dumbest thing I ever did was right after I left my first job out of college. I was not trained in the financial field. My degree is in journalism, and I was writing serving in a trade association as director of communications, and it was a nonprofit organization, and so they had a 403b plan. That was their retirement plan, and I was putting away 5% of my pay into that retirement plan, and when I left that job after about two and a half years, they said to me, what do you want to do with the money in this plan? And I said, well, how much is it? And I'd only been there a couple of years, and this was back in the early 1980s, so my salary wasn't high in the first place. And they said, well, you've amassed about $800. What do you want us to do with the money? And I said, you mean I got $800 sitting in this account and you're letting me have it if I want it? And they said, yeah. I said, great, cut me a check. And I immediately spent it, and I have no idea on what. Today, of course, I realized that had I taken that $800 and continued to save it and leave it alone, now 40 years later, how much money would that be worth, thanks to both compound growth and the biggest stock market gains in human history? Boy, what a foolish thing that was. And it was because at that time I had no understanding or comprehension of money, didn't understand compound growth or tax deferral or the need for delayed gratification. And so I squandered away what was at that time my life savings.
Hmm. What do you think then is the biggest mistake that so many of us make with our money today, besides perhaps overspending on frivolous little things and neglecting to plan for the future? When your clients come to you, what's usually the first thing you repair?
For our clients, what we generally fix is how their money is invested. Most people have a very poor asset allocation. Most of them don't even know what that is. How much of your money is in stocks versus bonds versus government securities versus gold, foreign securities, bank accounts and CDs? How have you taken all of your money and split it among all the different asset classes? Most people do a really bad job of that. They end up either taking too much risk or they're earning too low in return. Either way, they're not doing themselves a lot of good toward achieving their financial goals. So the number one thing we repair for our own clients is the need to make sure their money is properly invested. For most Americans, I think it's more fundamental than that, because let's face it, most Americans don't have any money to invest in the first place. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're squandering the income that they've got. And the number one reason I find that they're doing that is because they don't realize the importance of saving money right now. Most people don't understand the concept of compound growth. A lot of people say, I've got a lot of expenses right now. I've got a lot of issues. I'll save later once I get past these costs. And later on, my income will be higher too, because I'll be making more money. I'll have promotions or career success, and I'll make money later. So I'm going to get out of grad school. I'll worry about saving after I graduate. Or I'm about ready to buy a new house. I'll worry about saving later. Or I'm having a young child. I'll wait until the kid grows up. I'll save later. And people squander the number one most precious resource, time. By failing to understand that saving at age 20 just a few bucks is of far more value than saving thousands in your 50s, people squander the most valuable resource. In fact, when people come to my seminars, the most common thing people say to me at the end is, I wish I'd started saving 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Everybody says that. And even though everybody says that, my response is, well, have you told that to your kids? Because your kids are 20 years ago. So you blew it, but you have a chance to make sure they don't blow it. And too often, parents don't share their experiences with their children. And as a result, the children grow up as financially illiterate as the parents.
Right. There's that famous saying, time is wasted on the youth.
Yes.
But I speak to millennials all the time. I often go to college campuses and give talks. And I think what you said is so poignant, and I'm actually going to lead with that from now on, is to, you know, scratch talking about IRAs and 401ks to 20-year-olds. Talk about time, and time plus compound interest, boom. That's your solution.
I'll give you the one number that matters to a 20-year-old. If a 20-year-old wants to amass $1 million by age 65, all they got to do is save $3 a day.
Oh, my gosh.
That's all it takes, $3. That's less than a cup of coffee, a pack of cigarettes, a six-pack of beer.
Yeah.
Anybody can come up with $3 a day. But if you wait until you're 50 to try that, now you need over $1,000 a day.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's the problem with American savings rates.
Let's transition to happier thoughts. Although $3 a day sounds pretty easy and doable to me, but let's talk about Rick Edelman's So Money moment, a time in your life, Rick, where you feel like you really had a financial win, and share the lesson with us.
Well, my wife and I, when we started our financial planning practice back in the 80s, we gave up everything in order to do this. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment. We didn't own a television. We worked in the business 24/7. This was the work ethic that my parents had taught me in starting their own business. And every dollar we earned we plowed back into the business. And I remember saying to my wife one day we're going to have a profit of $5,000. I don't know when, I don't know how long it's going to take, but that's our goal, is to one day have at the end of the month, after we've paid all our bills, we paid the rent in the office and paid salaries and paid all the bills, we're going to have $5,000 left over in the checking account. When that day comes, we're going to the mall. And we're not leaving the mall until we spend the money. And that day finally came. It took years, frankly, and the day finally came. We were so excited, astonished, frankly, that there was money left over in our checking account after paying our bills. And dutifully, we honored our promise to ourselves, and we went to the mall, and we bought an ice cream cone. When it finally came down to it, we couldn't bring ourselves to spend the money. It had taken us so long to earn it. It had been such a challenge to produce it that we could not bring ourselves to squander it on frivolous spending of clothing or toys or electronics that we had been doing just fine without. And we knew we would continue to do just fine without. And so we managed to buy ourselves a couple of ice cream cones. We went home, and that money went into savings. And we began to realize that the ability to spend was just as good as the spending itself.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You know, I had that epiphany myself. You know, in your 20s, you're poor and you're eating tuna fish out of a can and you feel like the world is against you. And all I could do was obsess about the purse I wanted, the house I wanted to buy someday. I always was looking at what I didn't have and what I would spend my money on if I had money, and I would just obsess about it. And then finally, when I started to make good money, I started to have my financial basis covered, and I took on a more sensible approach to life and realized actually what I really wanted. And what I really wanted, by the way, was nothing what I wanted when I was quote unquote poor. I wanted more stable things, secure things, like a college savings account for my son. I wanted to raise a down payment for a home one day, and as opposed to buying, you know, sort of these superficial, artificial things that we think will make us happy, but really don't. And I think it's interesting that that mind shift happened once I started to make, quote unquote, enough money, where I felt like I could get my financial basis covered.
Yeah, it's a shame that most people don't understand that point.
Yeah. Well, let's talk habits, Rick. I'm curious to learn what habits, just one, that you practice on a consistent basis. Maybe it's not daily, but it is conscious and consistent. And the best part is it helps to keep your finances and your money growing.
This one actually was taught to me by my big brother, Brad. He taught me this when I was a kid. He was 8 years – still is, of course, 8 years older than me. And so he was a solid teenager when I was only 8 years old or so. And he gave me a Planner's peanut can, an old beat up can, and he gave me some money, some coins, and he said, collect your change and put it into this peanut can, and when the can fills up, roll it up and I'll take you to the bank and I'll help you open a bank account. And to this day, I do. I still have that very same Planner's peanut can now, 50 years later, and I still do the very same thing. One of the things I learned on how to save money, when people, so many people say to me that they'd love to save but they can't afford to, here's the simple trick: collect your coins. Never spend coins. Only spend paper currency. Now, I know these days most of us are using credit cards and debit cards, but I would argue not to do that. I would argue that you should carry cash, and when you go into Starbucks or you go to get a soda at lunch or what have you, don't use your credit or debit card. Use a dollar bill. And hand them the dollar bill or the $5 bill, and when you collect the change, don't spend coins. If that thing is a dollar, a dollar one, don't give the cashier a dollar and a penny. Give the cashier $2 to get the 99 cents in change. Take the change every day out of your wallet or purse or pocket, throw it into a Planner's peanut can, use whatever piggy bank you like, of course. And if you'll do that, at the end of the month, you'll come up with $20 to $30 in savings, literally without trying.
Oh, easy. I do this myself. My husband makes fun of me, but it's one of my, you know, my sort of childish pleasures is going to TD Bank with my mason jar of quarters and dimes and nickels and pennies. And like a kid, literally, I'm behind children in line.
It's great. It feels empowering, doesn't it?
We're going to do it on my birthday. It's like, this is what I want to do. I want to go and like get my $300. I really think there's going to be about $200 in this jar, and that's going to, you know, help us get whatever I want that day, which is nice.
So if you feel that you can't save money, just collect your coins. It's very, very effective. If you get the spouse and children involved, you'll come up with $100 a month or more. And now when you get the children involved, have them roll the money. Don't take it to the bank and let them roll it. Let the kids do it as an engagement. And they'll begin to understand the nature of money. Questions will naturally emerge when they're dealing with this. And then you show them how to throw the money into a savings account, later into a mutual fund account, and you begin to develop smart money saving habits.
I love that. Okay, Rick, we're almost through, but before we go, we have some So Money fill in the blanks that I'd love to get your on the spot answers to. If I won the lottery tomorrow, let's say $100 million, the first thing I would do is
give it away.
All of it?
Yes.
All right. Nice tax deduction there too, might I add. The one thing that I spend on that makes my life easier or better is?
When I travel, I have a chauffeur driver take me from place to place. Nice. Without having to hunt for cabs and deal with all that, it just is a guilty pleasure.
Yes, and you can be accessible. What, you're not driving. You're hands-free.
Yes, I'm much more productive in the car.
Mm-hmm. My biggest guilty pleasure that I spend a lot of money on, maybe just a little too much, is?
Cars. I enjoy cars, and so I have some pretty fast ones, and there is no economic legitimacy to any of it.
Right. These aren't quote, investments so much, but guilty pleasures. I love it. One thing I wish I had known about money growing up. It sounds like you had a very an above average upbringing with regards to learning about money, but what would be one thing you wish you had learned?
It would be truly understanding compound growth and the importance of investing in the stock market.
And finally, I'm so money because
it's my career.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much, Rick Edelman. We'll be keeping an eye out for you. Congratulations on all your successes, and we're wishing you even more and more and more in the new year. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Farnoosh. The very same to you.
That is a wrap. If you'd like to learn more about Rick Edelman, head over to edelmanfinancial.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Rick Edelman. His most recent book is called The Truth About Retirement and IRAs. It's a number one national bestseller. We've got all the info for Rick at somoneypodcast.com. You can also download the transcript from this interview there as well. And please keep your questions coming. Hop onto somoneypodcast.com, click on Ask Farnoosh, and send me your biggest money question or your career question or your time management question or what you hate about the show, what you like about the show. I am all ears. Saturdays and Sundays, I respond to you. And if you love what you're hearing and you want the podcast to continue shining its light in the iTunes store, please take a couple minutes to leave your honest review on iTunes. It's the single most impactful way, besides subscribing, of course, to support this show. And like I said, to continue its nice positioning in the store so people can find the podcast organically. And as a thank you, I would like to do a drawing every week where I select one new review and gift that reviewer a free 15-minute money session with me on Skype. And I've been doing this for now a couple of weeks. And so please take advantage of that as well. When you leave a review, email me, farnoosh@somoneypodcast.com, and I might just pick you for a one-on-one. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. I hope your day is so money.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first, and they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person, contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.